Well, welcome to the Church Office Podcast.
My name's Gavin Smith, and if you're joining us on video, then here's a little wave.
We're excited to have Nigel Ring join us.
I've never actually heard the word wicked and accountant put in the same sentence.
Well, hello and welcome to the Church Office Podcast. My name is Gavin Smith, and it's a joy today to welcome you to our Admin and Ops Podcast. We love talking about the work of ministry behind the scenes, and we love getting guests on. And our guest today is Steve Robinson from Cornerstone in Liverpool. Welcome, mate, to the podcast.
Hi, Gav. It's great to be on it. I think it's great to have two really cool accents on your podcast.
It is. We haven't had a Liverpool accent on here yet, so
first time.
Will I need to do a transcript or not? Are we going to be all right here?
I think Scouse is so close to Welsh.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's all like, I think your Welsh listeners will be able to understand it, but maybe some of the English will need a bit of translation. It's amazing what you can do now with AI it and is. All that stuff.
That is true. So, Steve, tell us a bit about your church for our listeners who haven't come across Cornerstone.
Yeah, I'm one of the pastors of Cornerstone Church in Liverpool. And we historically were a Brethren Assembly. It was called Ramleys Road Chapel. And in 2009, my wife and I, Sean Amy Jones. That's very Welsh, isn't it?
That is very Welsh.
Yeah. Sean and I and our kids, with a group of people, went and worked with the Brethren Church. Yeah. And did a church replant. That's how we would describe it. They had about 15 people. They were very close to closing the doors. And God's been really kind to us, really, really kind over those last 15 years. All of those original people are still with us, and a few have retired and moved to the lakes, and a couple of are now with the Lord Jesus. But the most of the original folks are still with us, which is wonderful. So amazing. In those 15 years, God's been really kind. The way I describe it is that he's given me a front row seat to watch his son build his church. We've been able to grow. So we're right in the heart of Liverpool. We are the Penny Lane area of Liverpool, literally. Yeah. You know, from where I'm sitting, if I open the door, I can see Penny Lane and the Sgt. Peppers. And so we're right in the heartland of the Beatles. And we've been able to plant four churches in those 15 years that are all in the Merseyside area. And we formed together what we now call the Cornerstone Collective of Churches, which is a communion and family of churches that are trying to reach Merseyside with the gospel. So, that's us.
That's great. I love it. And if you've been listening to the podcast for a while, you'll know one of our guests, Anna Wood, and is now one of our trustees, works with Steve, and she's your operations director, isn't she? Something like that sort of title.
She is. She's brilliant. Anna and her husband actually were part of the original team.
Yeah.
In 2009, and served faithfully as a church member all that time. She became a trustee, and then in 2020, she came on board as the operations director for the Cornerstone. She's brilliant. Don't tell her. She is absolutely brilliant. Really gifted. Really efficient. Just really gets what it is to use this particular gift in this area of like operations, administration, strategic thinking.
For a gospel perspective, for gospel purposes.
So she
She's excellent, isn't she, with people and organizing stuff, and she's been able to not just serve your church but serve some of the church plants as well, which is a really interesting model. And we did chat to her a little bit about that kind of structure, and it is effective, isn't it? It is working.
It's really, it really is. In fact, I'll be honest with you, predominantly most of her job is serving the other churches. So we see that as a broader thing. I think when you want to be a church that plants churches, the operational side of things aren't things that often church planters are thinking about primarily. Yeah. It's the things that will keep them up at night, probably. Yeah. So if we've got somebody or a team of people who understand those things, see the importance behind those things, and then also can help the church planter. I don't think it's necessary that the church planter needs to be relieved of all worry of those things. I think it's important. I think it's good to have an idea and understand it. Yeah. And Anna does that really well, working in partnership with the different pastors and elderships across the collective, and to to make sure that we do the right things and make sure that we do ministry well, because a lot of it is, this isn't just ticking boxes. This actually helps us doing what we want to do.
Yeah.
She's brilliant at it. She's brilliant.
Absolutely. It's great. Now, I wanted to connect with you, particularly on the podcast, about your new book with the Good Book Company, Serve. And mate, tell us a little bit about why you kind of, you know, thought about writing this and prompted to do this.
Yeah, so in all honesty, I was asked to write it. So I was prompted, and the Good Book Company approached me. And it came off the back of a book that my friend Tony Marita from the United States wrote called Love Your Church.
Okay.
And there were 8 chapters of Love Your Church where he looked at what it meant to belong, to gather, to serve, to honor, to welcome. What did that mean? Yeah. And they made a decision that they would love to take each of those chapters and unpack them a little bit more. So I got a call and said, would I be willing to have a go at writing that, which I did. So, you know, as much as it wasn't my idea initially, I think as soon as you start speaking to somebody, you know, I'm a church pastor. I've been in ministry for church leadership for 20 years now.
Yeah.
If I can't, you know, think through effectively or get excited about what it looks like to help people serve in the context of being God's people, I probably should hang up my hat. So I got really excited about it as soon as they spoke to me about writing that particular book. And then it began, it was interesting really, because I think when you write a book like that, that is anything to help people live as the church, you can't help but write it for the people that you're serving. So very much so it was, I want to write this book in order to help our people think through what it looks like for them individually and collectively to be people that serve. So very quickly after being asked, my heart, my passion got into, okay, how do I help the folks that are coming to Cornerstone, those who've been Christians for many, many years and actually may be weary with serving or are going through the motions? I think we can do that. And then the other end of brand new Christians, people who are like wanna do everything and wanna serve in different ways. And what does it look like for us to help people think that through and then help people step into serving in that context? You know, the Ephesians tells us that God has planned works of service for us.
So
the reality is that, you know, my conviction is that is for the church, but individuals within the church, because obviously we see that we're a body. So I think it's important for us to help people figure out that theologically, but also what does that look like applied for them as individuals in the context of the local church they're in the context of the culture and the time that we find ourselves. So that's, I got very excited about writing that and putting that together.
Yeah.
It was a joy, actually. It was a joy. It was very life-giving for me.
Yeah, yeah. And that text in Ephesians 2, isn't it? It's lovely, isn't it? The, you know, those good works that God has prepared in advance for you to do, isn't it? It's just a lovely for you to walk in that kind of everyday activity, that it isn't just the big missional things or the big, right, we're going to go out and go off to Africa and do this big, huge mission, and that's what good works looks like. It's actually the day-to-day, you know, good works of, you know, picking someone up for church, sitting with somebody, welcoming somebody, you know, helping in the kids ministry, all these little things, praying for the church, you know, in the midweek. These are all the good works, aren't they, that God calls us to do, and that is exciting.
Absolutely.
I love that. You start with this premise that the gospel is the biggest motivator and should be the biggest motivator. And not only Christ's love for us, but also Christ's example. And, you encourage us in the book to read through the gospels and just, you know, circle all the times that Jesus just serves different people. Fill us in on that foundation, because that runs throughout the whole book, doesn't it? This isn't just find your gift and, you know, use it. There's something that's underlying here in terms of the foundation. Fill us in on your thoughts on that.
Yeah, so the first two chapters are the why and who we serve. So why do we serve and who are we serving? And I think that's so important for us, because the why is the reason. I'm going to sound like some sort of life coach now, but the reality is the why is the reason why we do anything.
Yeah, yeah, that's
the why or the why not. You know what I mean? That, you know, the why do I want to come on this podcast and talk to you? Primarily because I love you, Gav, and I think you're great, and I want to support you and encourage you. And I, you know, there's a why behind that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So the issue is this, why are we doing what we're doing? And so often we can, as Christians, forget that, I think, and we can walk into that context. The why behind, you know, why do I get up out of bed every day and work? Why do we get up at 6:30 and not 7? Because I could get up at 7 instead of 6:30. Well, because I've got kids that have to get to school. There's a why behind it. So I think it's really important for us as Christians, because what the devil does is he wants to distort that why and that who.
Yeah.
So I think the way he distorts it, and we see this right at the beginning, don't we? We see this. He distorts the why and the who and makes them about me.
Yeah.
So why am I doing this? I'm doing this for me. Why am I doing this? I'm doing it for me, for my own affirmation, so people love me. And who am I saving? Ultimately, I'm saving me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so I think it's so important. And over the years, I've experienced this personally for myself, but also seen it in other folks that I've been working with, that if certain affirmations aren't met, or if certain rewards aren't given, or certain expectations aren't met, it can cause people to stop serving or change their attitude in those things. And the reason why I wanted to root it right into the truth of serving God and the truth of the gospel is because those things, he doesn't change, and that doesn't change. So if I'm not being affirmed, so, you know, I preach most weeks. If I'm, you know, and I know my own heart, I know I get down and I'm like, I've absolutely smashed that. That's that's a banger of a sermon. And nobody thanks me for it. I know what's going on in here. I know what's going on here. So then I have to preach to myself to say, actually, no, I'm serving God and his people. And the wonderful thing is, the Father's delighting in me. Yeah. The Father delights in me, and he's given me this way to do. And he said, and even in my distortion of my self-righteousness in that moment, he still delights in me. Yeah. And that's why I'm doing it. I'm doing it for his glory and for the good of his people. But ultimately his glory, because even if it's just for the love of the people, there becomes a moment when I don't love the people.
Yeah.
And there becomes a moment when the people don't love me at times. So if that is the purpose, so the reality is this, we serve because of Jesus, ultimately, 100%. It's no, you know, it's never less than that. It's never less than that. And I think it's so important for us, especially in our Western culture, where everything is about being affirmed. And everything being about being comfortable, and everything being about rewarded, for what you do. And I think it's so important that the reality is this: we are affirmed.
Yeah,
we are affirmed. We're children of the living God. He loves us according to his mercy. We are affirmed. We've not been promised comfort in this life, but we are headed towards that beautiful inheritance. We're serving. It's going to be wonderful. And the third one is we are rewarded. We're going to get a crown. He's going to say to us, well done, good and faithful servant. Ultimately, because we're serving in light of what his son has done for us. So I think it's important for new Christians to see that and to get that. And I think for new Christians, it's, look, you don't have to serve for God to love you more. This is how he loves you. You get to do this. He doesn't need you, but you get to do this. So this is who you're serving, and this is why you're doing it. And then for those of us who have been Christians for many, many years, the reality is we get the doctrines of grace. We know we're not serving, but actually there's a different context of what it looks like for people to respond a service to the fact that I may have been doing this for years and nobody ever recognized it, but the reality is this: God knows he loves me and he delights in me, and I get to serve the King of Kings before him. So I think that's another reason for doing that.
Yeah, I think that's great, isn't it? Because you're right, as you touch into why do we do what we do, you know, so much motivation for church administrators might be, well, we do it because we love the people, or we love, you know, the flexibility and the culture that are in churches. So we love all of that. We don't want to be, you know, in the world with some of the pressures that you might find in other workplaces. And you might, I can't imagine there's loads of church administrators serving for the reward, you know, in terms of the pay. but you're right, isn't it? Those things could change. You could be 10 years into a role, and you're motivated by serving the people, and those people in your church do change over time, don't they? People leave, new people come, There are challenges that we, you know, we're a broken world and a broken church. So we are going to, that is not going to be the same. So if we're rooted into that as our motivator, then it does, you know, you either walk away or you just kind of give up internally. Do you know what I mean? You sort of check out.
Absolutely. And I also think the issue is this. We're checking out probably. It's not because we're checking out because we're not feeling the love of the people.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what I mean by that is, so it's interesting. The issue is this: if we love God and with our heart, soul, and mind, what flows from that is that we will love people even when they don't love us. It's really interesting that Jesus gives Jesus takes a step further and says we don't need to love our enemies.
Yeah.
So that whole concept of what it means to love people that hate us.
Yeah, yeah.
The issue is this: in our service, I think we check out of serving because if it's all about loving the people, we'll check out. Yeah. But we'll check out. We won't check out because we don't love the people. We check out because we're not feeling the love of the people that we believe that we should have. And I think most people check out because of a lack of affirmation.
Yeah,
I'll be honest. I want to say check out. There are right reasons to stop. Yeah. There are reasons to move. And I'm not saying that. You know, you're going to be a welcomer and you need to do that till the day Jesus takes you home. I'm not saying that. But what I'm saying is the time that he has you doing that, do it with all joy and delight. And if people are ignoring you at the door, or if people aren't, or if people have a go at you because they're the first person that they see as they walk in, or the last person they see as they walk out, the reality is this: if we're doing it out of a love for the Father and his love for us, we'll want to love those people. We'll want to love those people. Yeah. I think the reason why people struggle with service is because we focus on ourselves ultimately.
Yeah.
You know, all those things.
Yeah. That is the challenge, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah. Exactly right. You touched on it a little bit, this kind of idea of, you know, people do grow weary in service. Mm. And, you know, I guess the simple answer is, you know, when we're motivated by the gospel and what Christ has done for us, then that we need to remind ourselves, don't we, of the gospel, that it isn't just the entry point of, okay, yeah, I'm saved, and you know, the gospel goes on the shelf, but we're talking about sort of everyday application of the gospel that helps us in service. What other things have you got that help us with this kind of weariness? If people have been serving in roles for, you know, 5 years plus, 10 years plus, any advice for that?
Yeah, so I think like Romans 12 for me, I do a lot in the book around Romans 12. So you've got this wonderful, obviously the book of Romans, you've got from chapter 1 right through to chapter 11, this, you know, the beautiful unpacking of the wonder of the gospel for us. And then in light of that, Paul says, therefore, according to God's mercy, give your bodies as living sacrifices. Yeah. And I think part of living sacrifice is, so the issue of sacrifice, and they would have understood that straight away. We don't really get sacrifice. For us, sacrifice is giving up chocolate at Lent. You know what I mean? Or not having a drink at the weekend or something. You know, that's what we see that. They, you know, the folks reading that at the time, even the Gentile Christians would have had a concept of what sacrifice meant, and it meant death. That's what it meant.
Yeah.
So it's giving your body as a living sacrifice. So that meant I am living and I am serving, but there is an element of death in the midst of that, the sacrifice and that sacrifice being self. So not for my gain, but according to the grace and mercy of God and for the glory of what is to come. Because I think the whole context of Romans is Paul is writing to the church in Rome, asking them to help him get to Spain. He's like, can you help me get there? This is where I want to go. So you've got this issue. So I think weariness in a broken world is part of what it is to give our bodies as a living sacrifice.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is, I think we will grow weary because we are limited beings.
Yeah.
The only being in the world that doesn't grow faint weary is God.
Yeah.
So therefore we will grow faint and grow weary. It's what we do when we're weary. It's where we go when we're weary.
Yeah.
So I think weariness, If I was to bracket it with weakness.
Yeah.
So I think we live in a culture, especially in the Western world, where we are, and this might be changing in terms of the younger generations. We are quick in my generation, I guess, to repent of weakness rather than embrace weakness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think part of giving bodies a living sacrifice is that I'm going to die to self. I'm also realize that as I'm serving, there are elements of serving in a broken world that are going to be there. And what do I do in the midst of that weariness and that weakness? And for me, it's then, and I think this really rolls into, do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind. Think of yourself with sober judgment, he says.
Yeah.
So the sober judgment is, I am going to grow weary at some point doing what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I am.
Don't be surprised. Yeah.
Don't be surprised by that.
Yeah.
I am. I'm going to go weary because I'm not God. Two, the devil's still having a go. We're still living in a broken world. And I'm fighting with the flesh in the context of what that looks like in my service, in the context of the truth of the gospel. It's what I do in the midst of that. So I don't want to be conformed to the things of this world, because being conformed to the things of this world when I'm weary is I just give up.
Yeah.
I go and find something that offends me, or something that's more interesting, or something that's different. And hear me, there's nothing wrong also with going, I need to change, or we need to change. I'm not saying that that's wrong. But what do we do with that weariness? And where do I go? I want my eyes and my heart, and my mind to be taken to.
Yeah.
Look what Christ did for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
In the midst of his limitedness as a human being, in his weariness, he gave himself. And I think I want to be able to embrace that weakness, because it's in the embracing of the weakness we're strong, you know. Yeah, 2 Corinthians 12. There, his grace is sufficient in those moments. Mate, I love what I do. Like, I love what I do. I love serving. But I'm telling you, I have, and I feel that I have more mornings now than I've ever had when I'm weary.
Yeah.
And if someone said to me, you don't have to go in today, or if someone said to me, there's another option, or it's a great opportunity to retire early. Mm. You know what I mean? And in my fleshiness, I want to take it. I really want to take it. I was speaking to somebody yesterday, and I was in the gym, actually, which is interesting. And I was in the gym, and I was chatting to someone else who's a bit older than me. We were just talking about different things. And I just said to him, I just can't wait for Jesus to come back. And there's an element I want him to come back because of the glory of what that means, but also because I'm weary.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? There's
a longing for that last day, yeah.
Absolutely. But I think if we embrace our weakness, and we move our hearts to the wonder of the gospel, our strength is in him, his grace is sufficient.
Yeah.
Then we can function in his strength. And that's what we should be doing anyway.
Serving
in his strength. In light of that. So I think don't be surprised. Preach the gospel to yourself.
Yeah.
Ask other people to provoke godliness in context of that. But also, you know, like, don't allow the feeling of weariness to be the arbiter of truth.
Yeah.
But also see that it is a guide. Because the weariness might be because you do need to rest. The weariness might be, there might be sin going on. The weariness might be other issues. And I think we've got to see those feelings as guides, but not as the arbiter of truth.
Yeah, that's really helpful. That's really helpful. And I think if you're listening to this as a church administrator, there can be a sense with us that we've got to have everything together, and we've got to have, you know, we've got to be experts in everything. We've got to deliver. And people look to us, and we often help to bring strength into lots of different situations because we wear so many different hats. But you know, hear this, you know, it's key, isn't it? I think to just draw somebody else in and be willing and open to talk about that weariness, because we don't like to. I don't like to talk about my weakness. I don't like to talk about that I'm struggling today. Would you help me? And I think sometimes there can be a sense of, we don't have to do this weariness on our own, but actually, you know, talk to your pastor, talk to someone that you're working with, talk to a friend. And they'll be, I think people will be able to help point us to I've been helped and pointed to the gospel, because I've not been able to get myself there sometimes. And I think that's the reality sometimes, isn't it?
Totally the reality.
Yeah.
And you know, I think that's, you know, it's the wonder of what it is to be the church, to encourage each other, to admonish each other, to all the one another's. It's for that purpose. Look to Christ.
Absolutely. It's great. One of the other things you cover in the book, which I enjoyed, and you gave a shout out to church administrators, which I was like, come on, Steve, love that. And particularly to Anna. But identifying gifting, using your gifting in the context of the local church, you start to open that up a little bit in the book. Yeah, fill us in on how you presented that.
Yeah. So, you know, the Bible gives us, I think, some real clear areas that are important for service in the life of the church. I think in terms of ecclesiologically, in terms of the structure and governance of what churches should be. I think that's quite clear. So that's the first thing. So obviously elders and shepherds, pastors, that sort of context. And I think the rest is there are principal elements to that. In the sense there are some prescribed things and then there are some described things. So even like that, things like gifts of helps, what does that mean? You know what I mean?
What does that mean
then, first century? What does that mean now for us? And you know, there weren't safeguarding things that needs to be worked through then. So what does that mean and what does that look like? And I think we have to work hard to figure that out. But I think what is prescribed is recognizing the church is made up of all the different parts. And I think that's really, really important. Yeah. And obviously in 1 Corinthians and in Romans, Paul gives the analogy of the body.
Yeah.
That's so important.
Helpful, isn't it?
Yeah, really helpful because I think what we do with church life, because I think we've to some extent narrowed church life in our context down to a service.
Yeah.
Or down to a week of programs.
Yeah.
Which in one sense then says to people that what it means to serve God is to engage in these parameters.
Yeah, it's true.
Now, those parameters are there. And some of those parameters are clearly there according to scripture in terms of preaching and qualified elders and all those things. But then what I love about what Paul does is he also lists out some specifics as well. Yeah. So it's like, let me give you some ideas what that could look like, yada yada, blah 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 blah. Yeah, and I don't think that list was exhausted in his mind, and it's, you know, obviously so it's not so I think it's two things here really. I think what we've got to see is that being the church, so the role of the church is to display the manifold wisdom of God.
Yeah,
and there's a complementary nature to that in the sense that we complement each other. So thinking about like even like a marriage, male and female, we complement each other as male and females in the context of that marriage. We are both human, but we're different. God's made us different to engage. Yeah. And that's the same in the church. There's a complementary nature. God is individually brings all different parts to form the body with Christ as the head, and we all complement each other. Yeah. So, you know, my hand complements my foot. It's different, but it's part of the same body. Serving something that helps in that context. And I think we know this is not like there's people far more clever than I have written about this down the years, but the reality is this. I think we elevate certain giftings and certain parts of the body above others. Now I don't think elevate is the right word to use. I think there are, you know, if you don't have elders, you don't have a church.
Yeah.
You could have a team of administrators, but if you don't have elders, you don't have a church. So there are certain roles and character traits and giftings that are required in order to be a church.
Yeah.
However, the church then needs to function rightly and correctly. That then brings the elders' responsibility is to create the atmosphere and platform for the rest of the body to flourish. So I think it's what's really important is that churches then function in such a way that allow people the opportunity to use their giftings or to explore their giftings in the context of the parameters of what your local church looks like, but also to see that being the church is outside of that.
Yeah.
With me?
Yeah, absolutely right. Yeah.
So what I'm saying is I think we don't want to narrow down what we mean.
Yeah.
When we talk about service for God, we don't want to narrow it too much to what it means, because what you will do is you'll unwillingly leave people out or ostracize folk.
Yeah.
But let me give you an example. There's a guy in our church, new Christian, and he looks in, and we're not like a heavily program sort of church, really. We do a lot of stuff in community and stuff. But even in that, there are certain parameters that people look in and go, well, I couldn't do that and I couldn't do this. And he said to me, but I tell you what I could do. I could just there's a couple of guys I could just go and have a coffee with them and encourage them. You know, so some older single men. This guy's a bit younger. And I'm like, boom, there you go.
Yeah, yeah. That's great. And you shared in the book about your mum, didn't you, who's, you know, at home a lot on her own, but she has people that drop in. She has coffee with them. She's praying for the church. She's doing crafts for international mission and getting people involved. We've got to see it broader than just the program and services. I'm absolutely convinced of that as well.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And I think one of the great joys of my job as a church administrator is to help people connect those things and to see those things and release those and say, okay, so that doesn't look like there's a way that you can serve on a Sunday.
Yeah.
But look, here's all the other things that you could do, you know. Okay. And the joy of connecting and the joy of saying, actually, yeah, would you pray for this? Would you pray for this ministry? Would you connect and support this person? And what we find, don't we, that happens right alongside services, discipleship takes place, doesn't it? And the two are together as well, aren't they?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think that they work together, but also we've got to see the vital nature of that. Yeah. You know, I think, you know, being a pastor, you know, I do have quite a lot of non-Christian friends. I actually serve in the community that I grew up in, so that's been really helpful for me.
Yeah, yeah.
I know for a lot of pastors it there's a difficulty in trying to engage with non-Christians. And I think that's important to try and do that, to be an evangelist.
Yeah.
But at the same time, reckon that God has called you to serve in a certain way to help those who are on the front line in the context of their office buildings or their schools or the universities or wherever they're working or on the streets, to be engaging with non-Christian people. And actually seeing that as part of what God's providence he has for your particular local church, and actually celebrate that. Yeah. So when people are you know, spending time with their non-Christian friends, going down the pub to watch the football, and then, you know, just loving on them and encouraging them, they are serving.
Yeah, absolutely right.
They are saving.
Yeah.
And, you know, they are, you know, when the folks are having neighbors over for a barbecue and inviting a few other people over from church just to mix, they're saving, you know what I mean? And they're able to open up doors that we can't open at this moment in time. One of the great, an example that we had many, many years ago, there's an older gentleman in our church, Roy, his name is, he's been at the church since he was in his 20s.
Brilliant.
80 now, and he's amazing on a one-to-one with people. He can't help but talk about Jesus, you know what I mean. He used to cruise with his wife when she was alive, and you know, he'd be just talking, he can't help himself, he just, any conversation just walks into it. Now Roy is not going to be able to be on university campus with some of our students.
Yeah.
He just can't, you know, like, it'd be mad, he just can't do that.
Yeah.
What the students can do is invite some of their friends over to their gospel community for dinner and sit them next to Roy and Roy tell them about Jesus.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You and me?
Yeah.
That's all part of it. Yeah. It's all part of the service, and we're all saving. And no one's standing on a stage.
Yeah.
No one's punching anything into a computer. No one's playing a guitar.
Yeah.
No one's doing others. And they're all wonderful things. Praise the Lord. You know what I mean? This is just doing general life with gospel intentionality. For what purpose?
Yeah,
serve God and to make him known. And I think that's what we've got to see. And then when you think about elders and deacons and those who have specific roles, we've got to think, what is our role? And I think our role is to help people live out what it looks like to serve God.
Yeah.
That's part of that is, we make much of Jesus and we do that. So I think if our role is just to make this building function, which is a part of the role.
Yeah.
I think we miss it. Yeah. But if it's to create the atmosphere and platform for people to serve with a confidence in the gospel, knowing that that's being viewed and understood, and I think people are serving all the time. They just don't realize that they are.
Yeah, it's true. And there is a role, like you're saying, isn't it? Equipping the saints for the work of ministry. It absolutely is that. And people recognizing that they are serving. And just as you talk about that, you know, Steve, there's intentionality, there's purpose, there's mission, that's all connected into this, isn't it? It isn't just, like you say, we're going to have a really, really well-run, efficient church. And that's not our passion. That's not our calling, is to take the gospel out there. And I love how all of this fits in and together. you talk in the book about renewed joy, and it's, I guess it's helping people, isn't it? And I've got a big voice on this, is trying to say that, you know, I say over and over again, connecting the things that we do to the gospel, isn't it? And seeing it as gospel mission and helping people make those connections. What else is just life-giving and joy-giving? How do you encourage people as they are serving?
Yeah, I think what we don't do well is reflect on the evidences of God's grace when we live and serve. And I think I want us to, you know, part of what I was thinking when I was writing to help people in the midst of the joy of serving is to be reflective of what God is doing in the midst of that. You know, so the Lord Jesus, you know, for the joy set before him, endured the cross. So you've got that sacrifice and that weakness and that brutal nature, but it was for the joy set before him. So obviously Jesus is looking forward. So the joy of obedience to his Father, the joy of what's going to come for him, the joy of the fact that people like you and I are going to be caught up in that. So the joy set before him. And I think sometimes when we're serving, we could be good at sort of reviewing at a functional level. Do we review at a evidences of God's grace level? So for example, you could you know, in our elders meetings, and we've fluctuated on this, we've done this for years and then we didn't do it, and we're looking to do it again, is we'd spend the first 45 minutes just reflecting on the evidences of God's grace in the life of the church. And I tell you, when they were the most fruitful and the most joyful, when we were walking through really difficult seasons. Because in the midst of that darkness, the shard of light of God's grace in heaven, because his grace is all over everything, all the time. And we've got to see that. So I think in the context of service, what is the evidences of God's grace? And sometimes you've got to look for that, but then also realize if you can't see it, it's still there. So if you're an administrator and you're banging out policies left, right, and center, knowing that you're going to send this out and most people aren't going to read them, just call it what it is. People are going to read them, but people trust you and you know it's going to be there and you need to have these things. What is the evidence of God's grace in that moment? The evidence of God's grace in that moment that he has called you to be the conduit and the means by which God's people are able to function in a way that actually removes any blockers for the gospel to be proclaimed, the gospel to be received, for people to be loved, for people to be cared for people to be kept safe. The evidence of God's grace is that we have a God that wants that to happen, and you're part of making that happen in our context, in our culture, in our time, with whatever we need to. And then when those policies kick in, the evidence of God's grace is how, and we've had to walk through stuff like that even recently, the work that someone like Anna has done in the midst of the, what is the point of this? What, we're just ticking boxes. You know, she doesn't say that, but that could be going on in her mind. Well, the evidence of God's grace is that in the context of the gospel, we've been able to walk a road with integrity, an integrity in light of the policy. And God's there. And then ultimately, the reality is this: when people get saved, when people are restored, when people are, all that is being done in the offices, in the study, at the door, is an evidence of God's grace. And I think part of the joy for me is reflecting on the evidence of God's grace, which takes me back to Romans 12. I think, well, that's what Paul's doing. In light of the mercy and grace of God, give your bodies as living sacrifices. Now, think of yourself with sober judgment. Okay, so what does that mean? I've got to look again at God's mercy and grace. I've got to keep looking there all the time, all the time. And I think that's what brings the joy of serving and having our eyes open and to see the evidences of his grace.
All the time. Absolutely right. Like on Easter Sunday, we've got 6 baptisms and people are writing testimonies and you start to see them and hear them. And what's surprising is that, you know, there's obviously a moment where they encounter grace in a preached word, or they've heard the gospel and the power of the gospel has changed them. But so much of their testimonies is, I met so-and-so for the first time at the door. They, you know, we had lunch together, we had coffee, and then I came to this, you know, food bank. I was served at food bank, and then I met this person, and I came on Sunday, and then suddenly I feel part of this. And you go, That's the church in action, serving that person. And we've all played maybe a tiny part in it, just a smile or a wave or here's a coffee. But those little things have been God's used them and used us to bring about, a story where this person is totally changed by the gospel. And that's kind of, having that ability to reflect, like you're saying, the evidence is a grace is essential in this, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I also think it's good to do that for others. So I think one of the other things that brings joy is we honor each other.
Yeah.
So I think it's important to, I think I talk about this a little bit.
Yeah.
I don't think we're not great at that. We think it's our job to keep people other people humble. It's not.
We've just
got to get that out of our minds. It's not my job to keep anyone else humble.
Yeah.
It's my job to outdo them in show and honor.
Yeah.
That's what Jesus
said. That's helpful. Yeah, that's clever.
That's what Jesus said.
Yeah.
That's what we're told. Outdo each other in show and honor. That's what we see in the word. So what you've got to do is one of the ways that we can help with the joy of serving is honoring people.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about blowing smoke. I'm talking about honoring them, godly honor. Give God all the glory, but honor the person. We just don't do that very well.
Yeah.
The guy at the front who's going to speak at the conference might get it.
Yeah. Before.
And that's great. And that should happen. Well, our default is let's stop doing that. No, continue doing that.
Yeah.
But also honor the people and thank the people and tell them that the Lord is delighting over them in what they're doing. Honor them for what they do. And I think we need to build a culture in our context. And I'm talking, our American brothers and sisters are brilliant at this.
Yeah.
And rather than, they are brilliant at this. And we are, as Brits, look over and go, we've got to stop that. We've got to honor each other well. You know what I mean? And encourage. And because I'm telling you, when a brother and sister in Christ honors you in a gospel way, it rekindles something in your heart to continue, and the joy that you get to save others and ultimately the joy that you get because you're serving God. I think we need to do that.
Yeah.
We need to do that more. And I think that brings joy.
Yeah.
It brings joy.
Steve, that's excellent. Well, let me encourage our listeners, go out and buy Steve's book on Serve. It's great to read. I've been listening to it on Audible. So it's available on that, isn't it, as well? And, You didn't speak on it. We were joking about that earlier.
No, I didn't. For some reason, they didn't want the Scouse accent on it.
Yeah, they didn't.
They've got some guy from down south somewhere. So I haven't listened to it yet.
So check it out. It is great. It's a great book and worth doing. Now, there are two things. I probably should have started the podcast with these that came out straight away. One was a surprise. One was not a surprise.
Okay.
You're a Liverpool fan.
I'm a big Liverpool fan, yeah.
Huge Liverpool fan.
A big Jürgen Klopp fan as well. Not just Liverpool, it's Jürgen Klopp. Legend.
It must have taken you a few weeks to get over his last statement.
Well, we're still. I've only just now started wearing colour again. I've been wearing black for the whole time.
Now, this one was a surprise. The second one that you noticed in your book was that you're a Downton Abbey fan.
I'm a Downton Abbey fan, yeah. I got sucked into it. Yeah, I don't... You know what I mean? I don't tell many people that, but then I've written it in a book. So
written in your book.
Five people that have bought the book know about it now. I found it fascinating. It's funny, really, because I watch. I don't know about you, but I watch things and I always like picture myself in the context.
Yeah.
I don't know. Watch The West Wing and imagine being the president and all this sort of stuff. So if you ask my wife, I talk about that stuff all the time, but if you ask my wife, Sean, who does Steve want to be? It's like, I want to be Downton Abbey guy, the Lord of the Manor. That's what she's
Lord of the Manor.
But I just thought, I enjoyed it, but I was always fascinated. The fact that, you've got this layered thing.
Yeah, this house, yeah.
But obviously, it's not a perfect illustration because it's not God. So I enjoyed Downton Abbey, yeah.
Mate, well, thanks for taking the time to chat to us on the podcast, mate. It's an absolute delight. And we're just grateful for you, grateful for Anna, and grateful for your support of the church office, mate, and all you're doing.
You're doing a great job, bro.
Thank you, bud. Well, if you've got any questions or you'd like to connect with us over, the topics that we've talked about, please get in contact at questions@thechurchoffice.co.uk. Please go out and buy Steve's book and get into it. I think you'll really, really enjoy it. And we'd love to see you or hear of us on the podcast in the next few months. All right. Speak to you soon.